This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 313, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's the unlucky episode 313.
More like lucky.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
All about the 13.
We are iFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics this week. Not as many, but we're okay with that. We come back to the website. We write about the best book we read. That's the pick of the week. We talk about the website and the other books of the week, other topics of interest, emails, voicemails, all kinds of fun things. And before we get to the show, reminder, this is a discussion show about comics, so there'll be spoilers. If you haven't read your books, come back or just realize that it's not a big deal. Once you realize that, I think you're much happier in life.
By the way, I didn't do the spoiler warning last week, and I don't think anybody complained. Did you see any complaints?
Oh, we could probably drop it from the script then.
Yeah, that was my experiment.
It's all about cutting the script to the bone.
Yeah.
Lean writing, people.
If it takes a sentence to stop the angry emails, I'm fine with that.
I just want
to. Josh, we can just direct the emails to Ron.
No, to be honest, I miss the angry emails. So yeah.
I have some. I get them. I'm saying if we worked for how many years to get people to really care about the comics, and now we're going the opposite way.
Or don't
buy that money.
It's how fine. We keep it interesting for ourselves. Yeah. Now we go backwards.
Yeah, we got to mix it up. We got to change.
It's cyclical.
Yeah, it's evolution.
This week, Ron had the pick.
I did, and Lord, was I happy to have a small pull list. Not that I dislike comics. I love comics, but man, it's been a rough couple of months, and having 12 books was a sigh of relief after the 30.
It's a nice change of people complaining. Like, no, you know, it's nice. It's nice. It was nice to be done reading my comics at like a really bizarrely early hour of the day.
And you get a little breathing room, and you get a little, you know, but also it gives an opportunity for other books that sometimes get overshadowed or whatever to shine, like the case of this week's Pick of the Week, which is Near Death number 3. Near Death is a book published by Image Comics, written by Jay Ferber, with art by Simone Guglielmini.
I'm Gugliotta.
And we talked about Near Death when the first issue came out, and I was very bullish on it. I was very excited for it because I've been a fan of Jay Ferber's for a while, and it was his kind of, as far as I know, his first real entry into like kind of doing a crime book. And what I really, really enjoyed, and I talked about it in my review, and I talked about it when we talked about it on the first issue, what I really enjoyed about it was that this is a crime book, I don't call it a crime book. I feel like it's like more like a crime / action book because it lacks that really noir-y kind of feel that I feel has been totally beaten to death over the past couple of years.
By three books.
In comics, yeah, exactly. Well, no, but I can't tell you how many times.
You just don't want to be talked to about stuff you're not interested. Oh, no, so much crime. No, just do crime books.
No, it's not even that. It's not even that. But it's just like, but you know, I mean, in our work, you know, we work at Graphically, we work at iFanboy, we get a lot of stuff. If I see another book described as being noir, you know, and like that sort of thing, it's just like, oh, all right, enough with the noir. But regardless, so Near Death is a little bit of a breath of fresh air in that it's a crime book, but it has a 80s action TV show kind of feel to it. I love the format of it. I love that it's a one-and-done kind of scenario. You could literally pick up this book not knowing anything about the characters or anything and read it, and you'll get the gist of it. You'll get the idea that it follows this guy, Markham, who is trying to be a better person than the professional killer he was because he had a near-death experience and is afraid that he's going to go to hell, so he's trying to undo all the killings he did by saving lives. You totally
Does
pick
it work
up
that way? Is that in the Bible?
I don't know if that's really theology. Theology approved. So you get the sense that you got this guy who's a criminal, who's a contract killer, who's trying to turn things around. I thought this issue specifically was interesting because we get introduced to it, which could potentially be an interesting relationship or character dynamic. We get a little glimpse of his past, of the main character Markham's past when he killed a cop. And he happened to kill the partner of a cop who in the present day he runs into in Seattle, and he actually catches wind of the fact that she's being targeted by some other crooked cops, and he steps in to save her and help her bring him down. That's totally the kind, and it's just one, this self-contained story. It just happened. I thought it was a well-done, well-paced story. We got the glimpses of the past. You saw what happened in terms of the action. And then the resolution was not the, you know, ultra-violent, kind of everyone died, gun battle, whatever. Actually, it was pretty clever. And it was, you know, utilizing methods that you wouldn't expect from a crime book, you know, like leveraging the press and, you know, kind of almost more realistic kind of scenario. And after I read it, I'm like, I just had so much fun reading it. And really, I think that's, you know, a kind of comic that's not out there right now. Yes, there are a lot of comics that are fun, but very few are just like strictly one and done. You know, like so many were, you know, we're writing for the trade or we're doing story arcs and things like that. But the idea that you can pick up one issue and enjoy it for what it is and not worry about what's before or what's coming after is immensely gratifying in my mind. And, you know, additionally, I think it's the kind of book that you can do in comics. I think it's we see a lot of creator-owned comics, you know, kind of leveraging different genres and different things like that. While, yes, this could be developed into a great TV show, and I hope maybe it is if Jay's lucky and all that sort of stuff, if it goes down that path. But, you know, he's got stories to tell, and, okay, great, you want to have a contract killer who drives a Maserati and have a big, you know, have this thing happen down at a police station, stuff like that. You can do that in comics. There's no budget, there's no limitations or anything like that. So it's cool to see these kind of stories being told.
It's definitely unique. There's not a lot of books out there like this that are doing it in this style. It can be tough on the storytelling, though. I thought there was a lot of leaps in this issue that didn't really make a lot of sense because they had to get the story done quickly because it was just a one issue. And it's tough when you're trying to tell. Yeah, they are self-contained for the most part, but he also has an ongoing arc in the background. And there was a big leap in the middle where he's befriended this cop and she's been the one trying to chase him because he killed her partner a long time ago. And he basically tells her, "Hey, I went to hell. I saw all my victims. Now I'm trying to do good." And she basically just accepts it and moves on. And it was kind of like,
"Well, I
understood why he had to go that way because you don't have time for him really to convince her. But it just kind of felt very abrupt. And this is not like a TV show. If you filmed this script, it wouldn't take an hour.
Right.
So it's not like you have even TV length to do it. You have probably a third of a TV show length to tell the story.
And that's
so it's tough.
And that's almost the interesting challenge in that. And I totally can see that. And you're contained by the number of pages. But I made the comparison of this actually in the review on iFanboy.com. I made the comparison to The Human Target on Fox, that TV show, which I've immensely enjoyed and made me remember the, you know, like it was very reminiscent of a Stephen Cannell kind of 80s, you know, kind of action kind of show. But like I remember watching that show and there were tons of leaps like that. I mean, like you do things, they move the story along. You just have to accept, like, how did they get from point A to point B so quickly? Whatever, move on, just let it go. You know, like and while I do agree with you that you probably could have stretched this out and this could have, you could take this story and probably decompress it and make it into a 3-issue kind of story arc. The challenge is to get it into one issue, and sometimes you just got to be okay with that.
You know, I understand that's the challenge. I don't necessarily think it should have been. It's just that it's tough in this form. Matt, I don't know that it's perfected yet.
Yeah.
I think it's a solid book. I don't know that it's a great book, but I think it's a solid book.
Yeah. And Guglielmi's art is very, you know, like I could see comparisons to Sean Phillips in terms of, but I think Sean Phillips goes a little more cartoony. I got more of a Michael Lark feel in this issue than anything. But, you know, definitely solid in terms of, you know, solid art, solid storytelling. Love his drawing of that Maserati.
No, he does cars great, and if he did a book of all car chases, it'd be wonderful. Yeah. It's a little stiff. Again, it's kind of like the story. It's good, but it's missing some element that makes it great.
Yeah. Well, either way, I enjoyed it. It was you know, like, there were a bunch of books that very much did enjoy this week, but like ultimately when I finished this one, I'm like, oh man, this is just fun. This is just fun comic booking.
Will you guys stop arguing? Because this level of tension and this anger that is between you right now, where Ron says, "Oh, this is really good," and then Connor's like, "Yeah, it's good." I just
it's driving me crazy.
I can't. I don't know if I can work like that. I could. I may have to go. I just guys, keep it professional for God's sakes. I didn't read it.
But the Maserati's in it, Josh. I love that car.
Oh well, then shit.
I love that car.
So are posters at stores in the mall that sell bongs and fake lube.
Anyway. Not
that I'm comparing this book to that.
I can't believe you just said lube.
What's fake
really?
Lube?
Out of everything?
What's fake lube?
I don't know. Like that kind of lube that like it like smells like strawberry and it gets hot when you blow on it, but you really don't want it to touch your skin.
I
don't know.
Just unpleasant lube.
I don't know that at all. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Listen, we all have our experiences.
This is what happens when there's not many books out. Josh, yeah, exactly. You didn't read Uncanny X-Men number 2, did you?
What's that over there?
So
I didn't read it either.
Okay, well, what's interesting about Uncanny X-Men, what I think, there are a couple things that are interesting about it. First off, Kieran Gillen writing Sinister, a lot of Sinister in this issue, as in his Victorian flair, was just fantastic. It was like, if there was ever a writer who was more paired with a specific character, I don't know. Like, even though because Gillen's British, he's bringing that certain level to it. But this fleshed out a lot of what Sinister's doing and what he's doing in this story arc, as well as what his motivations are. And that was very, very enjoyable. But the later thing is that I didn't know, like, the book was great. I had a great time reading it. I got to the end of it, and then actually I highlighted a panel for This Week in Panels, and Connor asked me, he said, okay, what's the credits? Who's the artist? I turned to the first page, and I didn't even look. I just blow over that first page. Like, I don't look at the recap or anything like that. And I noticed that between the pencilers, the inkers, and the colorists, 9 people made this comic book.
It's a lot of people to pay.
Now, exactly. Now, what's interesting, though, is that unlike Hulk number 2, was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
I didn't notice the inconsistency, which I guess is how you do monthly comics with multiple artists, right? I mean, there was one flashback sequence that had a different artist, but that made sense because it was a flashback sequence. But throughout the rest of the book, it all looked very Pacheco-y, and I guess the guys who were, you know, assisting or supporting or whatever were good at aping it or whatnot. But between Carlos Pacheco, Jorge Molina, and Rodney Buscemi, who get the penciler credit, and Cam Smith, Roger Bonet, Walter Walden Wong, and Jorge Molina, who get inker credit, it seemed more consistent than Hulk. And if that's what it takes to keep a book on schedule, then is that okay or is that not okay? I don't know.
Guys, I can't get this under control. I'm not going to be able to record this show.
I didn't read this. I didn't love the first issue, so I didn't continue on. I saw the reaction on our site for the people who read it was mostly not very good, so I'm curious.
I had no problem with it. I didn't read any of those reactions, but I had no problem. I thought it was great. I mean, I thought it was – I mean, basically what you had was, you know, Sinister has cloned himself. Sinister believes he's become the perfection of mutant – you know, like he's mutant human personified perfection, and so now he's perfected cloning himself and has made a town of Sinisters. And so the X-Men are fighting Sinister, trying to figure it out. And then at the same time, the Celestials, in reaction to Sinister using the Celestial energy to power his cloning machine, now the Celestials are on their way to Earth, and there's a whole big squadron of Celestials on their way. So, yeah. I mean, it was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
You like Mr. Sinister. I don't even know what Mr. Sinister is. But, like, you were kind of fan, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but when you like something and you're given more of it,
yeah,
that makes you happy.
Exactly.
And so this is the kind of thing like, oh, this is your bag. This is your thing, baby.
Yep.
In the parlance of the British.
But there are a couple of good twists. There are a couple of good character moments. There's a couple. I mean, like it had everything I'd want from an X-Men. Like, this is the next chapter in the story. It was, you know, it was great.
Josh, you read Haunt?
I did.
All right.
Crazy, right?
Jump in.
This is the new beginning for Haunt. I read the first issue, and I read the 19th issue. previously, it was by a lot of people. It was the Todd. It was the Kirkman. Bobby Hollywood, sorry. The Ott Lee Ryan and Greg Capullo, who is now the most famous artist in comics. And it was fine. I didn't really know what it was. Didn't appeal to me. It wasn't a big deal. So this new team that came up is Joe Casey writing and Nathan Fox drawing it. And the Todd is somehow involved. I'm not sure how. He wrote the thing at the end.
I like the thing at the end.
The thing at the end was nice. And he was like, "This kid Scott Snyder's good." That was the best part of the whole thing. Yeah. I was like, he's like 35.
You've got to read it in Todd's voice.
Oh yeah, I don't know what Todd's voice is anymore because in my mind it's really turned into a thing. I'm gonna try to talk about this comic book. It's very difficult for me right now. Historically, Joe Casey's a very good reboot. There's another
Reimaginer.
Word. Reimaginer. Yeah, he can take a property that's sort of flagging a bit and really he'll bring his take to it. He'll do it every time. You may not necessarily always like that, but he can definitely inject some sort of fresh energy. And when also just in terms of talking about energy, Nathan Fox is a guy who I've really come to like. Just very energetic and very interesting sort of flowy, organic kind of line work. It was, Todd also described his art compared to his own, which I thought was also really funny. you got to read that part.
The Todd thing is almost the best part of this, actually.
I hate to break it down to that, but it made the whole – and I never stopped to read the text at the end of a comic book. But I read that. I ate that up like a fine meal is what I did. Basically, what was interesting is that
he says it's definitely a departure from the slow, methodical, hyper detailed line work like my artwork.
That's really, it's funny is that it's quite full of lines.
It really is, actually. Yeah,
there's really a lot of line work. It's a little sloppier, and I don't mean that in a bad way. The funny thing was it didn't really start the whole thing over in terms of explaining where everything was. You kind of had to pick it up in context as you were going, which I was totally fine with. There's a guy and his brother follows him around. His brother's dead and he follows him around in sort of spirit form, like a foul-mouthed firestorm, basically. And then there are a bunch of people break into the apartment and a fight breaks out and he turns into Haunt, which is some sort of ghost-powered, super-powered thing, and fights them. There wasn't a hell of a lot of plot there. But the tone was it was pretty good. It was like it felt like a Joe Casey book, if I can say that in a way. If you sort of get his attitude and the way that he writes, which to me is actually I find a lot of Stan Lee style in that. And I know that that's going to sound
that's
weird.
That's not surprising at all.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's a lot of that in there. It's updated and it's modern, but there's a sort of a catchy lightness to the dialogue, and it's kind of funny and a little bit edgy, but not too more than Stan, obviously. But it's kind of not taking itself too seriously. It doesn't sound like real talking. It sounds like like if you watch like an old 50s movie, like a
hyper style. It's stylized.
Yeah, but. And you have to get into that. You have to be able to like that, and it's cool. And if you do, then you'll have fun with it. I think it's definitely worth taking a look at.
Yeah,
Nathan Fox is fantastic. I mean,
yes, he is.
This taps into what I've talked about before. Is like I like comics that don't look like every other comic on the shelf. And yes. This does not look like anything else out there right now.
No, it does not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I want to see where it goes. I'm not going to tell you that this issue blew me away, but it certainly interested me a lot more than the first Haunt
issue.
I'm a
child. Sorry. I
didn't laugh.
There was a pause that really did it.
The pause is what killed it, yeah. I thought about laughing. But
guys!
All I know is this, that I read the first Haunt. I think we all read the first Haunt, and it did nothing for me. In fact, I think I told somebody that it was like one of the worst things I've ever read. But I really was intrigued by this. It looked great, and I'm intrigued enough to read the next one. So that's the most important thing, I think, in rebooting or restarting or reimagining the book, because it wasn't doing, it wasn't blowing any sales doors off or any kind of no one talked about it.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk going into it, and then it just like fizzled, and I stuck with it for like I think the first arc.
I was honestly at one point you mentioned it in the show a while back, and I was surprised it was still being published. That's how low profile the book had become.
Well, because what was interesting is I thought that because Kirkman pulled a Kirkman twist like at the end of the first arc where you thought it was going to go one way and then it went the other way. But then I trailed off after that. I just didn't stick with it. But I love the fact that they didn't relaunch it as a number one.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Just keep the same numbering, keep rolling. It totally harkens back to, building a base of it'd be so easy to release this as a number one and make a big deal about it. But it's like, no, issue 19, new creative team, roll. Now we're moving on. So
And I like that so much better. So I really do.
I do too.
That's a good point to bring up. For me, this was a really good week in terms of Marvel books.
Yes.
Actually, all of my favorite Marvel books came out this week, which I think are the only three or so Marvel books I'm reading anymore. Red Skull number 5 was one of those. This is the last issue, 5 of 5, of Greg Pak and I don't know that other name of the artist, Mirko Kolak, with colors by Matthew Wilson. This is the 5-issue sort of early origin of the Red Skull And there was a little bit of a twist in the end, which I thought was nicely plotted. I never read Magneto Testament, I think it was a lot like that in terms of the way that you guys were talking about it when it came out. It's just sort of a very political, dense, but subtle.
It grounds it in history and the backdrop. I mean, a lot of Marvel history is grounded in World War II, especially characters like Red Skull. And this actually makes it – I didn't read it, but I read Magneto. And so it grounds it in more realist and
realism. It was like that. I thought Pac really it was just a very nicely written book. It was really no giant explosions or any of the sort of stuff that you come to expect from what would be, a typical quote unquote Marvel comic book. But all the way through, this has been a really interesting, sort of almost a brave little book, because you're dealing with really kind of horrible things, and it exists in the Marvel universe, but it was done sort of very realistically. I don't know if enjoyed is the right word, but I was very impressed by it. I said that before about it. But really well done book. This is a great, great miniseries. It's sort of one of those things, like, if Marvel wants to, they can do something like this, and it was well done.
Yeah, Pac is building a little base of between the Magneto one and this one, of being able to take these kind of darker kind of characters and story kind of things and fleshing them out, making them really kind of meaty.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great.
Yeah, awesome. FF number 12 came out after now the split between Fantastic Four and FF after Fantastic Four 600. This is the first issue after the big 600th issue, which was last week, right? So this is like boom, boom. I got to say, first off, Juan Bobillo, love it. Love it. Oh, wow, there's a typo. I didn't realize. On the cover, they have two L's in his name, and on the interior, there's one L.
Well, that's a whole the pronunciation.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it Bobillo? Bobillo?
Bobillo? Bobillo? I found myself really.
Is it Michael Bublé?
It's Michael Bublé. It's his pen name.
Myself really enjoying his art on this, and I didn't think I would when I first saw it. I first opened it, and I was like, ugh. And by the end of the issue, it totally won me over.
It reminds me of the Lock and Key guy.
Yes. Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yeah, Rodriguez. Yes. Very, yeah. Very similar to that. Yeah.
A little of that.
Some great dialogue between the kids and the FF. I mean, Hickman can surprise me, and this is the area where he's surprising me with his characterizations and his, kind of the way the characters banter between each other and talk and that sort of thing.
His first indie books were so serious that it always surprised me when he's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
In the same way that Jason Aaron, even though we've talked to him personally and know he's really funny in person, it still surprises me when I read his books because Scalp is always indelible in my mind. So in the same way that Nightly News was so serious and those other books were so serious, we always surprised me. This I was torn on because I wasn't originally going to buy it, and then I decided to because it is continuing the story. If you want to get the full Fantastic Four story, you have to read both books. The problem was that in the story he already told, the kids are probably the least interesting part to me.
Yep.
And I still don't know who all the kids are.
There's a lot of them.
At times it's hard to know what's going on and who's talking, what the weight of the conversation is, because you don't know who, like, beyond Valeria and beyond Franklin and some people. There's so many kids, you don't know who they all are.
Yep.
But it was fun. It was funny. It was very. There seems to be an undercurrent tone in Marvel right now to make their books fun and funnier.
Yeah, maybe it's some sort of thing that they discussed or whatever. But like
Red Skull did not get that memo.
But this book was interesting, I thought, because you had very extreme personalities. You have Doom, who's under alternate Reed's control. You've got alternate Reed. You've got Nathaniel, Reed's father. You've got Valeria. You've got the kids, and like everybody has a very unique voice. And them interacting with each other, I just found hysterical.
I ended up really enjoying it, and I'm going to continue on now.
Yeah, like one of the kids, and I agree with you. I don't know who the kids. There needs to be some sort of, aside from Valeria and the non Moloids. Like there's one panel where one of the boys refers to the alternate Reed as Jerk Reed, and I just laughed. Like, I mean, Hickman's writing kid, like, as these kids kind of but very, very smart and talented kids. But it's I don't know. I really got engaged by the character interaction, specifically in Doom's Castle.
Yeah.
So I thought it was great, and what he's doing in Fantastic Four, I have no idea where it's going, and I think it's fascinating.
I also like that it's going to finish sooner. If he told this story in just Fantastic Four, it would take a year, whereas here it's going to take half a year, and then we move on to the next story.
Yep.
And I think you can probably just not read this if you don't read about the kids. I think you can probably do that.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see how much Fantastic Four leans on what happens in FF, or if they really do diverge and then reemerge, and how well he handles that. Yeah, I think.
Also, then the scene where she made the lightsaber was awesome.
The lightsaber was awesome. I thought the scene where she was talking to Nathaniel and they were talking about time travel and the background of the page was crayon. Was right, like a kid's drawing. I thought that was really clever.
That was very much a Hickman touch in terms of design.
Yeah.
But think about it. If you were a super genius kid, you'd build a fucking lightsaber. You build a lightsaber.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
which is what she did.
Well, what I liked about her reasoning was that one of the other kids was obsessed with Star Wars and she just wanted him to shut up.
But then she turned it on and was like, oh, I'm keeping it.
Yeah. That was awesome. But yeah, it's good. Good stuff. I enjoyed it. If you're looking for comics to enjoy yourself, you should go check out Graphically. Graphically is the parent company of iFanboy, and it's a great place to get digital comics. Go to graphically.com where you can read comics on the web. You can buy them right there from the website, and then you can sync them and read them on any of the Graphically applications for iOS, iPhone, iPad, Android. Buy your comics once, read them everywhere. It's kind of awesome. Tons of publishers, over 5,000 books from like over 300 publishers, including Marvel and Image and Top Shelf and Top Cow and Arkea and Boom and IDW.
Shinebox,
yeah. Yes, there's a whole tons of great stuff on there, actually. 215 Inc. has been putting out some great stuff. That's a great little indie out of Philadelphia. They're doing some good stuff. So, yeah, so check it all out. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there, something for everybody. So if you follow Graphically at Twitter, at twitter.com/graphically, you can get all the latest updates and get all the little specials and things like that are happening. And it's, you know, digital comics done well. So check it out at graphically.com.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give you a Graphically recommendation.
Yep.
There are a lot of number one first issues,
yes,
that are free. Like, I think everything from Top Cow, almost everything from Top Cow, the number one issues are free. Like, you can check out a lot of that stuff. There's a tip.
Yeah.
There's a lot of free stuff to sample.
There's a lot of free stuff. Yeah, exactly.
But I specified, because there's a lot there. Sometimes you don't know where to start.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm just trying to help, guys. Guys! Okay, I get it. You're getting along now, but it doesn't mean that you both have to team up against me. It doesn't have to be this here.
So we're talking about Cobra again.
Again.
That's because it's been so good.
Has it?
I feel like we haven't talked about it enough.
Yeah.
In fact, I put a thing in the best of the weekend panels, and someone was like, "Is this still good?" I'm like, "I've talked about this so much that Connor wants me to stop talking about it."
And I like it.
But clearly, I'm not talking about it enough. It's so good. You know what's so great about it? Joes are getting killed left and right.
Really, it's a good time.
And there's like no respect for the past here in the best way. Like there's double agents and traitors. And like the characters that you know from G.I. Joe from the very beginning. I'm talking about the early ones where they were all green and looked exactly the same. Steeler, Breaker.
Ash, Breaker.
Yeah. They're getting killed.
You know what? There is respect. There's no, but they're not holding it precious.
Yes.
They're not holding it as sacred. They're telling good Joe stories, but they're doing whatever they want, basically.
Really great sort of hand-to-hand fight sequence and standoff in this one too. Just great, great book. It's the same creative team that's been on it since the beginning when it was our third runner-up for Book of the Year 2 years ago.
Yeah,
forever. So it should definitely keep going on. I think a trade just came out of the first six or something.
Yes, it did. Or it's coming out soon.
Yeah. Pick it up. Yeah, it's just a good comic.
Cool. You want to continue talking?
I do. Speaking of pilot season, the sort of last bit, this was the last one that came out this week, was Theory of Everything, number one. And I couldn't tell
when
you.
When were we speaking of pilot season?
When were we speaking of it?
I said speaking of pilot season.
Oh, you know why? Because I was going to recommend a pilot season book when I said that before, but I decided to wait until now. Oh, so in my mind, that was totally.
In your mind, you'd spoken of it.
It's totally true. Theory of Everything, number one, is it reminded me very much of a Hickman book, actually. And it's this guy, and they come to him, and they say, there was a robbery. Do you recognize this tech? And the guy's like, yeah, that's my tech. I invented it, but I haven't built it yet. And so there's divergent realities and all sorts of shit going on and crimes.
That's me on a disturbingly regular basis.
Right. It was actually really similar to Marty walking in and pasting up the picture of the flux capacitor. It was really – it was a lot like that. But I mean that in a good way.
Did a guy make the face and hold his forehead?
Should have.
Great Scott.
Yeah, a guy comes in from another. It's a great little story. Some of the stuff this year has been pretty good. As long as I'm here, I'm going to suggest one. You can go to Graphically and get that, but you can also go get The Beauty. The Beauty, number one, because it's a pilot season book from Jeremy Hahn and various others. Really good sci-fi.
And the pilot season voting is coming up soon, right?
Monday. It'll start Monday. Starts tomorrow.
Exciting.
We'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
More from Josh.
I read Space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, Ron, you've got you're right. I didn't put that. Ron, you do clump the suggestions. You want to try to split them up? We just started this.
Not so much. So, Spaceman number two, Azzarello Riso. I thought I'd be the only person sticking with this.
Why?
I don't know. I thought you had a problem with it. I don't remember.
I said I wasn't sure, but by the end of it, there were things I liked about it enough to make me get used. Once you get used to a sort of weird dialect,
yep.
Like, once you get used to it, then it's not weird anymore. It's just
a common literary device. People are acting like it's a new thing.
I totally agree. And I get it. And it makes sense. And it's fine. It's just sometimes it slows you down a little bit and makes the story go less well. But it makes sense. And I like the idea of it a lot. It just took me a little bit to get used to, I think. Yeah. I don't want to say better or stronger issue than the one before it, but it definitely did a lot to hook me in further.
I thought it was really solid, really, really solid. And I did laugh because in the opening, I think on page 3, when they cut back to the astronauts on Mars and one wakes up and says, "What happened?" I did that in the Fred Willard voice.
This is Mike from I don't remember any of the words anymore. But it's so funny still.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
I said my phrase. What happened? That one's for free for you over there. Let's talk about the next book.
You know how at one point Wolverine was super, super dark when he massacred his kids for a half a year? Well, I think Jason Aaron he slammed the brakes on that sort of epic of Wolverine, and now we're in a new epic.
He looked at dead bodies everywhere, and he said, "What happened?"
Now it's very similar in tone to Wolverine and the X-Men, and I love it.
Yes,
well, Wolverine 19 was fantastic. Wolverine, this whole arc was fantastic.
19 was great, and I, as the X-Men fan in me, it opens up in Westchester County in Harry's hideaway, and he's shutting down because the X-Men left. Like, think about it, like the X-Men left, and so really that whole Salem Center. Like, what was
the economy just cratered in Salem Center?
Exactly.
Nobody's shopping. No one's buying. No one has to constantly repair things, so the hardware store went out of business.
And what I love is then Wolverine emerges from the ground with a dragon and asks Harry if his table's still open. And Harry's like, "You bet. We're back in business."
We just made our month. And he goes, more than that, he's got a bag full of money because he's got people who want to drink because they've all been fighting underground dragons.
Exactly.
This is one of my favorite books. I'm seriously loving this resurgence of fun, goofy comics, and it feels too widespread to not be some sort of
mandate.
We have to bring this back a little bit. Yeah. It's not every book, which it shouldn't be every book, but I feel it's a lot of books now, especially the Marvel side. I'm loving it. I think it was the panel of the week feature that between Wolverine and the X-Men and Wolverine, this will slowly become my favorite little corner of Marvel now.
Yes, I'm telling you, it's really good. I called it a few months ago. We get the Wolverine's girlfriend's back. She's relocating. She's going to follow him. She's going to work at the Daily Bugle, so that's awesome.
Parker was in there using the bathroom. Stop using our bathroom!
You don't work here! This is great. It was really, really good.
Fat Cobra just wants a couple of wenches and some beer.
So when we last left the Thunderbolts, they zapped out of World War II era, team up with the Invaders, and we said we don't know where they're going to turn up.
And I did not see this coming.
Not at all.
This was so good. How good was that? I mean, like G.I. Joe Cobra, I've been talking about it a lot. And I feel like I've talked about it too much, but they took such a turn this time.
This is amazing. Well, tell everyone what they did. Tell them where it is.
They went to England in around the time of the Jack the Ripper murders. Turns out that Hyde is the Ripper.
Yes, so good.
And Satana, yeah, who's with him. There's no preciousness about these characters. He's not trying to turn them into good guys.
No.
The daughter of Satan isn't going to go, "Well, I'll be good for now." No. She's going to help with the Ripper murders.
Yep.
Although that might not be the case,
I'm sure we'll find out what it is and all that stuff. But what I love is that when there's some Scotland Yard investigators stumble upon the Thunderbolts, they figure out where they are and they've already adapted the garb of the time, and they're explaining what's going on. They said, "Well, one of our friends, Hyde, who's named after the book that recently came out." It's like, that's a great little touch.
I like the really goofy dialogue that they gave them.
Yes.
Like it was like goofy Dick Van Dyke British, and I'm totally fine with that.
Did
in
you
this
notice
context.
That the fixer has a cane, or whatever, Techno, whatever his name is, the dude, his cane has got a little thunderbolt at the top. Like, it's just
nice
little touches like that are just, oh,
I'm telling you, Jeff Parker has really hit his stride on this book.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a completely fun book.
Yeah.
I didn't love it. And
it really can do everything.
I didn't love it. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was a big step back from the last arc.
Well then,
yeah.
Counterpoint.
It didn't seem as fresh and interesting. It felt convoluted. I really prefer Kev Walker to Declan Shalvey, who I like, but I really it's hard to when they go from one to the other.
Connor's just a downer today.
I just didn't enjoy this like I did the last two.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. That's fine. So Infinite Horizon number 6.
You're alive. That did not come out.
It came to an end. I'm holding it in my hand.
The last time I read an Infinite Horizon book, I was working my day job with Josh. I remember distinctly going to the store with him and buying it, reading it at my desk.
Yep.
It was a lot less of the two of us back then.
And it was interesting because I thought back to a comment, Connor, that you made about Phil Noto, how you love his sketches or pinups or covers or whatever, but his interior work doesn't really do it for you.
No, I said sometimes.
Sometimes, it's right. I would say check this out because I really enjoy the interiors.
I enjoyed the first two issues, but it's just been like 4 years since I read it.
I know. Yeah, well, that's all done. So you can read it in one complete thing. How you like with the indie books. You like to wait for the collection, and now you can.
It's not long.
But I really like what Noto did. He uses like little touches, like little highlights or little like lines that kind of outline the characters or whatever. And once you read it and it flows, I just really like what he's doing. I really like it. I enjoyed it, and it's all done. I never thought this day would happen. Ultimates number 4 from...
Please use the full title.
Ultimate Comics, The Ultimates, issue number 4.
Thank you.
With Hickman and Ribic. Don't be distracted by the cover, which has nothing to do with the book.
This is fantastic.
This was like, holy shit good.
This is the best Ultimates I've read since the first Ultimates.
Agreed.
The original Miller Hitch Ultimates. This is so much fun. This is the book for Hickman.
This was a blast. And so like what you've got now is you've got Asgard's been destroyed. Thor's the only one left. You've got this weird menace thing that nobody knows what it is. And then at one point, the leader reveals himself to Thor. And I was like, ooh, great. We're going to get a mystery of who's the guy in the weird helmet or whatever. But we find out at the end, it's Reed Richards.
So I didn't think it was a mystery. As soon as he revealed himself, I knew this who it was. But
oh, I didn't. I was.
It's very much in a similar tone of his Fantastic Four work, just with a bit more action and adventure.
Yep.
But it's that same heady sort of scientific tone he brings to it. Very, very, very fun. Yeah. I love this. And, this is tons of fun.
And how good is Ribic?
He's fantastic.
Like that double page spread when Thor saw all of his companions, the ghosts in Valhalla. I thought that was, I mean, like his Warriors 3. Like how cool was that? Ribic is good. Ribic is really good.
Yeah. So, no, this is
just
really
say
fun.
That because he could crush you with his bare hands.
With two fingers, he could crush me. He's a monster of a man. But he's awesome. He's a sweetheart.
Delicate pencils.
Yeah, exactly. Very
He draws holding it like a crayon.
It's almost like it was at New York Comic Con when I was at a dinner that he was at, and I was like, and someone's like, "Oh, he's on Rivik." I was like, "No," because he's like he's a big dude, and his art looks so intricate. You know what I mean? Like it's like I don't understand how the pencil could fit in that paw. But this is great. This totally. I mean, like I was a little wavering on this through issue 2 and 3, but after this fourth issue, I'm like, oh, I love it. This is great. Cool. So those are all the books that came out that we enjoyed.
Yes, and there's a couple more coming. Those are not all the books that came out. That's entirely untrue.
That's a lie.
Yeah. So we also have the community aspect of iFanboy.com where you can go through and rate your books and mark your own pick of the week, and we like to go through those and talk about them. And here we're going to talk to you about the top 5 picks of the week. And also just mention very quickly that Ron's pick of the week, Near Death number 3, did not light the world on fire, coming in at number 22 with 0.3%.
It might be just me. I think
somebody else, one or two other people, I think.
What you talk?
Number 5 is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 4, coming in at 6%. I don't know why I haven't started reading this.
It's awesome, by the way.
It is fun.
I missed the first one. Number 4, Wolverine number 19 at 7%. Number 3, Angel in Faith number 4 at 7%. Number 2, Ultimates number 4, as recently lauded, at 9%. And number 1, Daredevil number 6 with 42% was the winner for everybody. And of course, the first review up, Daredevil number 6, written by Ghost Man. And the story is 5 out of 5 and the art of 4 out of 5. I assume that's an error.
No, it's not. I was shocked as well.
Ron, you and one other person made your pick.
Really? Yes. Awesome.
Okay, so the reviewer says it's 4 out of 5 for some reason. As we said, pick of the week percentage is 42%. What a blast I had reading Daredevil. I got caught up with issues 1 through 5, and holy shit, this series is possibly one of the best things out right now in the world of comics. I love the retro feel of the story and art. Mark Waid is writing the shit, two shits, out of this book. Every issue is jam-packed with smart, intelligent dialogue that doesn't feel forced or pretentious. It also isn't boring, and Waid is able to hold your attention in the exposition scenes. This is not a fight of the month book. This is not punch after punch. There is a great story being weaved here, and it just so happens that it stars Daredevil, who occasionally fights a bad guy. I don't know if you read the same issue as I did. And I say this as somebody who enjoyed it just as much. There was a lot of fighting in this.
Well, no, but I think his point is that it's not just like Daredevil fights this guy, then Daredevil fights this guy.
No,
that
it's
telling, you know, stories, and which is totally true. But I think what's funny, we didn't talk about Daredevil 6, and when we were going through deciding what books to talk about, none of us brought it up, because I think 6 issues in and it's already at the point where it's so good, what more can we add to it?
It's Captain America territory.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if the success of Daredevil helped along this push to, and it's only been 6 issues, but this is a very successful book. The tone is completely different than it was before. It's a lighter, more fun tone, and I think a lot of books are going that way.
Yeah. It's not a 2-page spread, but the one where Daredevil comes in kicking and it goes across the 2 pages, that alone will get you a 5 on art.
Yeah, Marcos, the 4 out of 5 has to be an error on his part, because Marcos Martin is king. He's great.
As a swan song issue, it was a pretty good one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, this is great. I mean, as we look back, as we get to the end of the year, and we start looking at, you know, 2011 and what came. I mean, like, Daredevil's up there for best series, like best single issue, best first issue. Like, there's so many categories Daredevil's going to top out, I think.
Very seriously, like the easiest pick of the week I had to write all year was Daredevil number one.
Yeah,
and it was also the most like. It's not a problem to find something to say about this, and they've kept it up for 6 issues, which is impressive on its own. And is that the Emperor's Guard? Who is that guy? I was like, awesome, Star Wars is in this.
But like, and that's the thing. Like, when I was doing the pick of the week, I'm like, Daredevil's really fucking good. I think I gave it 5 stars. I'm like, it's fantastic. But it's like, what I don't know what, you know, there wasn't in this particular issue. There was no amazing revelation or no like insane thing or anything that stood out. It just is solid quality comic book.
Marvel, really good week.
Good week. Well, it helps when DC doesn't release anything.
Wow. Wow.
All right, our next review comes from T.R. Strick, who reviewed Flash Gordon Zeitgeist number 1 from Dynamite. And he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 1% of you all made this your pick of the week. And T.R. Strick says, confession time, Mike Hodges' Flash Gordon is my favorite film of all time. I saw it 18 times during its theatrical release.
Jesus.
Wow. I've never had a better time at the movies. It was my Star Wars, which I saw back in 1977, but didn't make much of an impression. Crazy.
Josh, how many times did we see Phantom Menace that summer?
10. You want to know something? And I know you're in the middle of this, but I want to bring this up. I saw the poster for the re-release, the Star Phantom Menice 3D, and I was like, I should probably go see that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to, and I'm not going to. But I felt the tug.
There's a visceral reaction for some reason. Yeah.
I said, go to that.
Yeah.
No. Although, how much fucking fun would that be to go with the two of you guys?
Oh, I'll go. When is it open? I'll go.
If it's flying over Christmas, we can go to see it in New York.
Hey, it's better than Step Up 3D.
Oh, wait. Whoa.
Oh, come on. Do you really think
that? I've watched that since. It's on Netflix streaming.
I know, so have I. Anyway. So back to the review. Over the years, I've met a few fans who've had the same mad obsession with this film. Fortunately for me, Alex Ross is one of these fans. Dynamite's Flash Gordon Zeitgeist uses the film as its springboard. Some scenes are lifted directly from the film, but setting the story in World War II is simply delicious. It appears the story will be splitting plots between Mongo and Earth. The art is the usual Dynamite House style, lots of reds and oranges, and the storytelling was perhaps a little clunky in a place or two. To be honest, it's hard for me to be objective about this book. It feels like it was written just for me. As this is a skip week for the DC 52 and no Mignola-verse books either, this is an easy pick of the week for me, highly recommended. So there you go. Flash, the one Flash Gordon fan is digging it.
In the world?
Yeah. No.
Had a Frankovia cover.
It had a pretty cover, I was going to say.
Frankovia is very quietly. I don't know if people recognize this because... Yeah, unless they do the comics page in Fanboy, but he does a good portion of the Dynamite covers.
Yeah.
Very quietly. He does a lot of Dynamite covers.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to pick up the Cassaday slack.
Exactly.
Is there Cassaday slack? I mean, he's not still doing that, right?
I don't know. His stuff, his Secret Avengers covers have been good. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Well,
so,
that's compared to the Ultimate covers.
Yeah, oh God. Why, Cary Andrews? Well, I just don't get. Is it some sort of joke? I don't get it.
Joke.
No, they're like, let's see if they'll print this. Oh shit, they did. All right, let me see what I can do here.
Well, here's what happens in the book. I don't care. Quiet.
I don't need to know what's in the book. I got an idea. Nick Fury skydiving. Gosh.
Nick's not in the book for at least 2 more. Here's the book.
All right. Well, if you want to leave us a review so we can read on the show, go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can make your pull list, rate and review your books, write a review. If it's good, we'll read it on the show. And that's how you do it. It's fun. Make your pull list every week. It's fun.
That's how you do it.
I got another cover, and I don't know if I should call him because this doesn't have anything to do with what we told him. It's just a picture of Wasp.
She's dead.
Well, I'm not going to call him. I'm not calling him. Just run it.
No email time. It. Eli says, hey, iFanboys, I was just wondering if you could pick only one comic from Marvel, DC, and Image. Which book would you pick from each publisher and why? So if you could only read three comics and one from each company, what would they be?
The dreaded Desert Island question.
Right now. The book right now.
Right
series
now.
Coming out right now.
Right now.
Right now. Right now.
Right now. Right now.
I'll go.
Okay.
From Marvel, I would pick Daredevil.
Okay.
From DC, I would pick Batman. And from Image, I would pick Chu.
Interesting. Okay.
And that could change next month.
Yes, but I'm saying right at this very moment.
Yeah.
Right. It could change when I'm done with the show. I could go and look and realize, oh, I should have picked Walking Dead, but I picked Chu.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'll go next.
Yeah,
because you two can't seem to.
What do you mean? I already went.
Connor just went. It's me.
No, you can't. I was going back to the thing where you're fighting.
Well, who's fighting now?
You. Hey,
jerk face.
Every week, you guys.
Just talk about the comics, okay?
I'm gonna be a big comic book star. You'll see. You'll see.
With the poster.
All right. Okay. If I could pick, you know, like one book. I mean, part of me wants to say Daredevil, but then, like, another part of me wants to say Thunderbolts, okay? But you did call it Marvel's best book very emphatically last.
You did.
It's the one I'm really enjoying. I think I would go with Thunderbolts because it's a little more to my taste, although I really do love Daredevil very much. DC, I would go with, right now, Wonder Woman. And
nice.
Image is tough for me. That's hard.
Image is tough.
Actually, do I include Vertigo in DC?
Yes.
Because I really want to see how Scalp ends. So I'd have
no,
to
you
go
have
with
to go. That. You have to go Vertigo for DC if you want
Scalp. Well, whatever. You can break out Vertigo. You can make that.
No, right, you can't.
Right. Then
where is Karen Berger's office? Is it fucking DC off DC's office?
If it came down to it right now, I'm not going to not read the end of Scalp. So I would pick that number one.
Have a couple more issues, and after that, you're only reading two comics.
Yeah, there you go.
Listen,
then you can move to another title.
Okay, then yeah. I pick Scalp, and then I'll pick Batman up after Scalp ends.
Nice. No,
why don't you just borrow Josh's Scalp?
We're not on the same island. Then we would always want to
swim over and read your comics.
We'd have to organize. You don't want to get we get bags and boards? What? I could just see that turning into a big problem.
Okay, what's your Image book?
Oh, that's really hard. Like, I got a Walking Dead Invincible thing going on, but then I also kind of want to say Chew. Walking Dead.
All right. So for Marvel, for me, at this moment, I got to go Uncanny X-Force. As much as my loyalty to Uncanny X-Men, but they fucking renumbered, so whatever. That shot out the door. So I go Uncanny X-Force, DC, The Flash, and then Image is very tough for me.
Right?
It's tough, but I got to go. I got to go with Savage Dragon. I'm 176 in. I can't bail on it now. So there you go. There you go.
That was just for us. That last
Shane from Texas. He wants to know. He says, "I was going to buy Fantastic Four 600 until I looked at the price tag. $7.99 for an issue is crazy, and so is Marvel."
Now, Shane,
so crazy it just might work.
Now, Shane, the reason why I brought this up because Connor, you weren't on the show when Fantastic Four 600 came out.
You did a show and I wasn't around.
Yeah, crazy. You were in Turkey jail.
It's like a baby when they don't see you, they just figure you don't exist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about Fantastic Four 600.
Oh, so good.
Right?
And the thing is, Shane from Texas, is that it was $7.99 for 100 pages and almost all of that was story.
No, all of it was story.
Was there no ads?
There might have been a couple ads, but there was
That's what I mean. It was like there was a very few ads. It was almost all story.
Yep.
It wasn't
filler.
Great,
no reprint.
Great value for your money.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you take a look at it, the average comic is 20 pages. And you got 96, so you nearly got five comics in one issue for the price of at $3.99 each, the price of a little more than two comics.
Yeah,
like that Fantastic Four 600 might have they did it right. That might have been the best value. And I agree with you. $8 is a lot of money. That was a movie in 1997. That was a I can get lunch sometimes for $8. Like it's a lot of different things, but I had no issue paying $8 for that book. At all.
We got one issue.
Well, I got one issue, but I had no yeah. I had no problems.
It was a big issue.
Yeah. It was the size of five, though.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Jim was even down with that too.
Yeah, exactly. So
it is a lot to swallow.
Like, but it wasn't like it was 32 pages. It was
No, I know that, but it's just like if you put it into your pile and you've got your thing budgeted like you normally spend, you know, whatever, you're used to spending $20 a week at the store, like that's half.
Right, but in specifically Shane from Texas, what he said was that $7.99 for an issue is crazy and so is Marvel. And that's the uneducated opinion of just seeing it on the rack and seeing that. And the thing is Marvel, and maybe Marvel is crazy because they've trained us to get pissed at, you know, like blah, issue 300 and it's got a 20-page story and like three reprints over the past 40 years and you pay $5.99 for it. And I'm like, well,
so what you're saying is they've trained us to not trust their pricing.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas this time they were making it worth your value, but we've been beaten so many times.
And that now you get people like Shane from Texas who feels this way. And in this particular case, Shane from Texas, it's actually in your favor. So
you should call your store, Shane from Texas, and say, "Hey, this is Shane from Texas." And they'll be like, "We're all from Texas." And they're like, "I know, but that's my name." Do you have any copies of Fantastic Four 600 left, because I've changed my mind about it. Apparently it's a good value.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Oh, what would you want us to do?" And just put it in the folder, "Mark Shane from Texas. I'll be in." And it'll be there. And then what's odd is they're not in Texas. It's Canadian. So he's paying Canadian rates. So
which is even worse. So $7.99 Canadian's like $9.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is only worth like two Great British pounds. So it's fine.
All right. So Shane from Texas, we urge you to go check out Fantastic Four 600.
How many beads is that worth? Blankets. Blankets, like beads, and horses.
On the reservation?
You get one horse. You get four blankets.
Only two of them have smallpox.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic Four 600.
So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. On to the voicemails. Our first one comes from Texas.
Hey, guys. This is Brian in San Antonio, Texas. And I had a quick question for you concerning digital comics. I started buying not the majority of my comics, but a lot of the other DCU, the new DCU books that, you know, just weren't high on my list. And I've quite enjoyed reading them that way. You know, Animal Man, Swamp Thing, Demon Knight. I enjoy it. I think I get a better reading experience out of it. But this past couple weekends, I was at a con, and I ran into Brett Peoples, the artist on Last of the Greats. And I told him I just picked up his book digitally, and I asked him, you know, what he thought about it. And he didn't seem too enthused about the digital comics, even though one of his books is selling through the Comixology app, which is what I use. I don't know if that's maybe just because he doesn't get as high of a cut for the books that are sold that way or what. I don't know. It seems to me like, you know, that is the way in the future of comics, but he didn't seem very enthused about it. And you know, I guess my question is, what's up with that?
Brian, do you know Shane from Texas? yeah, well, we talked about this a little before in that it, you know, the way to get a book can keep going is to pre-order it. The digital sales don't have anything to do with whether a book is going to keep going. And
well, number one, we don't know that.
None of us knows. They project out, and right now they use the pre-ordering to project out. And if you're a book that's a small indie book, then you're born on the bubble. So they, you know, that's going to be whether they want to keep, you know, that as of now, that's how it works.
Right.
It might not continue to work that way, and it probably won't. As far as the cuts, how though, I don't have no idea. That is how that works. But at the same time, when you sign on for a book like an Image book, where basically you're getting paid in the back end, you've got two things to worry about. First one is getting it printed at all and getting it continue to get printed. And then second of all is hoping that you can actually make some money off of it, which is very hard. I would go so far as to guess that most of the books from Image don't make all that much money for the creators. The sort of top tier definitely do.
Yeah, or at least out of the get go. I mean, like the game with Image, right. The game with Image is to get it out and then get it collected, and then it's a long, like several years later, it starts to pay off. Yeah.
But it's not like I've got to pay my bills every month kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like that for the most part. There are some who are, and that is more or less the case with a lot of indie comics. Image is sort of the main sort of way to look at it, but other places like that, it's sort of the same thing. So on the one hand, you know, the digital is a really good way for people to see the book, but I disagree with them for the point of view of like, if you don't want them to buy it digital, don't make that an option.
Yeah.
And don't make somebody feel bad for buying it in a way that you offered it to them. It's like trades. Yep. It's like, well, we'd like you to buy the issues. Then don't offer trades and make me feel bad about buying it that way. I'm the consumer. I get the choice.
Yeah.
So let me have the choice and then be okay with giving us that choice. But I also see where he's coming from.
Agreed. Yeah. It's interesting. We're in a very interesting time. I mean, right now the publishers see digital as a supplement to their sales. It's not It's not the main driver. And
they also see it as the only growth area.
True. Yeah. No. Exactly. Only area of growth and with tons of potential. But no one is making decisions based off the digital sales yet.
Right. So we're in infancy.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. We're toddlers now.
We're starting to walk.
We got one last question about one of the great artists.
Hey, guys. Love the site. Love the podcast. Quick question about Barry Windsor-Smith. He was one of my favorite artists back in the 90s. He did a lot of work for Valiant on Archer and Armstrong, and I think he was on Solar, Man of the Atom. Did something called Rune, R-U-N-E, for a while. I know he's a famous artist, came up in the 70s, but just wondering if you have any info about stuff he's doing now, if he's still around, just general information and your opinions about his work. Thanks very much.
As I understand it, he toured with Lindsey Buckingham for a while, then kind of just, he did a stand in Vegas. and I don't know if it was drugs or it was his ex-wife. But Barry, we kind of lost touch with, I have no idea.
I like hearing a Valiant fan. That's rare these days to hear something.
It is rare.
Yeah.
There are nine of you.
Yeah.
Well, Turok, the dinosaur hunter.
You're going to be excited next year, that's for sure. So Barry Windsor-Smith, he also did, in addition to all the Valiant stuff that our anonymous caller listed, he also did the Weapon X miniseries.
That's where I know him primarily from. Yeah, exactly. That was a gorgeous book.
It was in Marvel Comics Presents,
yes,
if you remember,
yes,
correctly.
It was.
Yeah. But Barry Windsor-Smith also did a bunch of stuff in the 80s and the 70s and stuff like that. Did a lot of Conan stuff and one of the era of 70s, 80s artists. He was one of the stars. You could actually just go to his website, which actually lists everything he's doing. I mean, I think it's Barry Windsor-Smith. Yeah, it's barrywindsor-smith.com.
B-A-R-R.
It looks like last year he finally finished his big epic Cimmeria Conan story that he's been working on since 1973. But he's also doing
looks a lot different than the beginning because it's been 37 years.
Yeah. But his website lists all the stuff that he's working on now and this other stuff that he's selling original art and he does this Opus hardcover, which is a collection of collecting his sketches and artwork and stuff like that. He's pretty much in the, you know, not retiring, but in the he's done kind of phase.
He's coasting.
Yeah, he's coasting. Yeah.
I don't want monthly deadlines.
Well, coasting sounds bad because he's not young, so he's in
that shit.
He's victory lapping.
It is interesting to see on his website he lists all the stuff that he's doing, and he actually lists, you know, Conan the Barbarian 1970 to 1995, and then he just lists comics, Marvel, DC, Valiant, Malibu, Image, and others 1968 to 1995. So it looks like after 1995 he just decided not to do comics anymore and became what he refers to as a storyteller, and he's done a couple of titles like Freebooters and Young Gods and Paradox Man and stuff like that and some monster stuff, you know. So he's still working, he's still putting out books of his artwork, but he's not doing comics anymore.
He's probably doing some commissions, you know. Cool. He'll show up at a show here and there.
Yeah. He's definitely a name, one of the greats.
It's not just Adam Hughes's gig.
Yep. So if you have any questions, you can
call. All-Star Wonder Woman, coming soon.
God. If you have any other questions that you want to call in on, you can call 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We got a bunch of calls over the Thanksgiving holiday. So thanks to everybody who called in. Reminder, let us know your name, where you're from, and keep it short. Keep it to about 30 seconds. You know, no more than 45 seconds just because, you know.
You get a lot of long ones. Can't run the long ones.
Exactly. So keep them short. We also have another podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss, which comes out every Monday where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out that you absolutely need to check out. And this Monday, we're going to be talking with Matt Fraction about Defenders number one, which is out this Wednesday. So if you're curious about why they're doing another Defenders book, you can tune in and find out. and you can get that on iTunes if you subscribe.
That's
iTunes.
How you sell.
And we also had a Talk Explode, right, Josh?
We did. I talked to Philip Sablik, publisher of Top Cow, which is it's a division of Image, but it sort of does its own thing. And he's more than a publisher. He's the editor and does a bunch of stuff. We talked about mainly pilot season and the stuff going on over there. Again, voting starts on Monday. Really just an interesting look at sort of trying to develop a different kind of comic book. And it's doing a different kind of thing. And then we talked a little about the other stuff going on from Top Cow. They're going to be going through a lot of big stuff over the next month or two.
So you can get that on this main feed just under the show, or you can go to ifanboy.com where you can find that, and ifanboy don't miss.
You can check out ifanboy.com for Ron's Pick of the Week review, all of our writings that goes up every day. Writings is a word, right?
Yeah, sure.
Moving on. You can read my Book of the Month review, which will come out as you're listening probably soon after. And all of our people writing very hard. We're going to have this is
writing hard. Write hard.
It's a Western theme week. Actually, this week in our family, we're going through all the gift guides. So if you want to buy stuff this week, this month, oh, man, this is really the end of the show, isn't it? If you want to buy stuff this holiday season for friends, family, for whoever, we're going to have a lot of gift guides for you this week. So check it out at iFanboy.com. Normally, we did a video show on that, but we're not because we're on hiatus.
Indeed.
That's right. If you saw last week, we are the video show we normally do every week is on hiatus for the end of the year, and some we'll be back some point next year. So that's that.
And, that, and that's lazy. It. And that's all there is.
That's it.
That's all there is.
It's mostly because Josh is lazy.
And there's nothing it's we can
done.
Do.
There's nothing we can do. He's gone. He's gone. It's gone. The video's gone.
We haven't had hiatus since 2009 or so.
It was the Rucka show.
Yep.
Yeah, so we every week for 2+ years, we needed to take a hiatus.
Yeah.
Listen, which is listen. Fair. The big shows, the TV shows, they get a hiatus, and they make a lot more money than we do.
A lot.
They get to rest. They get islands and shit like that. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at iFanboys, 326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc. We got some long voicemails, as Ron alluded to. Don't talk so much because we can't use it because we only have so much time in the show. But, you know, a lot of good voicemails have been coming in, so keep that up, please.
Yes. And if you like what you hear, go to iTunes, write a review of this podcast, as well as the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast, and tell your friends, spread the word. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/iFanboy, and on Facebook at facebook.com/iFanboy, and you can spread the word there as well. Tweet out that you like iFanboy, post it on Facebook, let your friends know, on Google+, all that fun stuff. It's help us spread the iFanboy word, the iFanboy gospel.
We are- Say it, but be like, qualify it. Be like, I like iFanboy, but not that Josh guy.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Right. So, buy my book.
So until next time,
yeah, I bought your book this week.
Yeah,
yeah,
I did. Yeah, I did.
I did. I saw, and you tweeted it. And you tweeted
my instinct is to say I'm sorry.
Well, no. I don't know what that. Tweet about it.
What's funny is that I saw you tweet about it, and I almost wrote back. I'm like, you didn't buy the book yet? Like, I bought it the first day it was out.
I didn't have a Kindle app. It's a whole thing, Ron.
To be honest, Connor got the better copy.
Yeah, I got
the first one jacked up.
All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh, and I'm writing hard.
We'll see you next week.
Bye, so Tom. Hard. Said Santa to a girl child, what would be your most to get? A little baby doll that could cry, sleep, drink, and wet. And then away you went, Rudolph, whizzing like a saber jet. Run, run, Rudolph, Santa gotta make it to town. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.